Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Carrie Wright, who will be telling us a little bit about disabilities lawn mowing. So tell me a little bit about accessible lawn mowing for someone with a mobility challenge that could be an issue, I presume.
Yes, I'm a quadriplegic, and so my hands don't work and my arms only half work. And actually, I've never thought about lawn mowing before, but we've got quite a large lawn, so we got a zero-turn lawnmower, and my wife drove it for about 10 minutes, and she came back to the house, and she said, you know what, I think this will work for you. And up to that point, we had never even considered it. And, it's very simple. The zero turns are very easy to drive. There's simply two handles. You push forward or back, and, it steers exactly like a wheelchair. It's quite an amazing thing.
So, do you find there are enough accessible opportunities for someone in your situation for day-to-day tasks like lawn mowing?
Oh, yes, I do. And, for me, the lawn mowing is a lot of fun. And, of course, we had to do a little bit of adapting, because my hands don't work, pulling back to go backwards and stuff would end up stretching my fingers after a while. And then they wouldn't hold on anymore. So we ended up going to an occupational therapist, and she made me a set of cuffs that are almost like your hands are in a curved position and they're held there firm. And that made it so I can drive this thing I can go for 4 or 5 hours without any trouble. But one thing we did have to do also is, because I'm so tippy, being a quadriplegic, I don't have any trunk muscles to hold me up. So we had a difficult time at first getting me to sit up and, not flop over to the side. What we ended up doing is we bought a race car seat and a race car harness and had that installed. So now I'm really tied in tight, almost like I'm in a race car, and I can do side hills and everything. So it still took a little adaptation, but it was very inexpensive to do.
So, in previous interviews, you've talked about things like glide flying and being out in nature. Can you tell me a little bit about the sense of freedom you once described when it comes to being able to do these things?
Yes, and that is the big thing for me is, at first, with a disability like this, you do think, or you come to believe, that a lot of things are not possible. And then the more you see them and the more you speak to other people that have tried different things, I start to realize that, it just takes a little more creativity to be able to do these things. And the freedom is incredible. For lawn mowing, for instance, it's so much fun. I just love to see the lawn grow so I get to go out there again. And it is being totally free of the wheelchair people driving by, they don't know it's a quadriplegic on the lawnmower because you're zooming around having fun just like everyone else does.
So are there any challenges in adapting things like this for your use day to day?
The challenges to do it?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yeah. What are some of the...
I guess, you know, one of the things was getting into the lawnmower. It is quite a lift up, but what we did was we installed a barn door track system, which was very inexpensive at the local farm supply store, and we used an electric winch to raise me up with the track installed in the ceiling of the garage, and then you can slide me over the lawnmower, drop me in with the electric winch, and then I get tied in and I'm gone for the day.
So, if you could send any message to the community about how things can be adapted and what a quadriplegic person is truly capable of, what would you say?
I would say with a little creativity, most things are adaptable. It is possible. Like a lawnmower is totally feasible. And for me, I'm very, very fortunate to have family and friends that are also very creative, and all I have to do is mention something like mowing the lawn, and they're like, they say to me, let's figure it out. And I find that enthusiasm on my part is contagious. And pretty soon you have a circle of great people that are willing to jump in and take your idea and add to it. And in many cases, they take the idea and finish it for me because they now know my situation so well.
So, in adapting various things, has there been anything that your friends have been able to help you develop that you really didn't expect was going to be possible?
One thing a friend of mine did was took an old electric wheelchair, and it was just sort of a pipe dream of mine that I wanted a four-wheel drive wheelchair. And he looked at it and he said, well, let me think about it. And I had an old wheelchair sitting in the garage. And it was about 4 months later. He came by and he said, can I take the wheelchair home? And I said, sure, what are you going to do with it? He said, oh, you wanted it four-wheel drive. He said, I finally figured out how I'm going to do it. And literally within 3 days, he had cut it apart and welded a new frame, and he had a four-wheel drive wheelchair built, and it works. 7 or 8 years later, it still works perfect.
So, if you could see anything adapted, something you'd like to see created for someone with a mobility challenge, what would it be?
Myself, I really like the power things. Like, I really enjoy engines and wings and things like that. I would like to see, you know, possibly a sidecar on a motorcycle that you drive from, and I've heard that that's possible and it has been done before. You know, I think that would be a lot of fun to experience motorcycling again. And, you know, I've seen sailboats done, and that's just an incredible experience to do that type of stuff. So I think, you know, literally the sky's the limit. You look and see an able-bodied person having fun. And for me, the gears start turning. How is that possible? You know, for myself. And if the only limiting thing is if you go to great lengths, and then it's a big hassle to get into the unit to use it. And, you know, then you find you don't use it very much anymore. But for me, when I see an able-bodied person having fun, and at the moment it's off limits to me because of my disability, the gears start turning, and I want to fix that.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure can.
Next up in our show, we'll hear from Kate Jean Corbett Pollock. Will be telling us a little bit about the laws surrounding homeschooling children with disabilities. I gotta warn you, folks, This interview contains mature subject matter and it might be disturbing to some audience members. Listener discretion is advised. So, is there a particular case you wanted to highlight for today?
Yes, today I'd like to talk about a recent case that happened in Georgia. It involved a man named Elwin Crocker, and Elwin Crocker had been married. There were some issues with abuse in the marriage where he was abusive to his wife. They had three children. One of the children has cerebral palsy, and Elwin, in that circumstance, for some reason, was given full custody of those children, and his first wife ended up homeless. Elwin then moved to an area in rural Georgia, a trailer park, and met another woman, Candace, and he got married to Candace, and Candace ended up being a stepmother to the children. They lived in a trailer, and Candace's family lived in the same trailer park, and they started to come around the trailer and hang out around the trailer, and neighbors reported that family life noticeably deteriorated at that time. And all of the adults seemed to be involved in abusing the children, particularly Candace's mother, who was very abusive to her grandchildren, her step-grandchildren. It was reported by another child in the area that she had witnessed the grandmother beating the boy, the little boy, for an hour with a belt. The Department of Family Services had been called to the trailer several times and made Elwin and Candace take parenting classes, but that was about the extent of anything that they did.
So,
after a while, the families decided to merge homes and move into one trailer together. There were five adults in the trailer and three children, including James, who had cerebral palsy. I did not read anything in the media about James having gone to school at all, ever. Not even a home school.
So, in situations... situations like this, I'm guessing, with the close quarters and his medical needs, there wouldn't be a lot of flexibility, really, for him to get around or to have any sort of mobility appliance if he needed it or proper access.
No, I don't think so. There's not a lot of detail about James because this was recent and James is a minor. James survived this situation. The other two children did not survive. What happened was they were pulled out of public school, and the boy was 14. We don't really know the circumstances around his death at this time, but he was murdered by Elwin and possibly with the assistance of one of the other adults in the home, and Elwin buried him in the backyard. About a year later, the 16-year-old girl was pulled out of school, and she was, this is really horrific, so fair warning to everybody, but she was kept in a dog kennel in the kitchen, naked and zip-tied, and they would starve her. They starved her and fed her distasteful food on purpose so she wouldn't eat, and they would taser her. Eventually, she passed away, and Elwin buried her in the backyard.
So
neighbors noticed that the girl was missing, that she was not around the neighborhood anymore. So a neighbor called police, and police came to the trailer and interviewed all five adults. It was very evident to law enforcement right away that everyone was lying. The next day, Elwin confessed, and he brought police to the backyard where he had buried the children and showed the police.
So... situations like this, you've got to figure the adults have some sort of psychological issues, something that compels them to act this way. They're not.
Well, you would think that, but I am doing a forensic science master's program now. This is my second master's. And often in these cases, when you're looking at the criminal mind is different from a psychiatrically disabled mind. And it's very common for people to ask me, these people were, you know, they were not right. There was something wrong
Well, there's a big difference between a psychiatric disability and somebody who is just a bad person. It's possible that there are psychiatric disabilities within these five adults that I don't know about. I haven't read anything like that. I do know there was drug use happening, hard drugs. And it's still, you know, it's in the court system now, so maybe more information will come out. But I would not be surprised if all of these adults were sane.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a minute, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages. Just to remind you folks that the preceding interview contained mature subject matter and listener discretion was advised.
This is Joe and Cam, your favorite two male nursing students at the University of Windsor, hosting No Scrubs on CGM FM 99.1.
Join me and Joe every Tuesday at 12 and Wednesday at 4:30, where we discuss today's hottest health topics related to student life. We do the research, so you don't have to.
Remember, you can listen live or online at www.cgm.ca. And while you're at it, feel free to give us a follow at CGM No Scrubs on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Carrie Wright about his accessible lawnmower and Kate Jean Corbett Pollock, who gave us a somewhat mature subject matter interview on the subject of homeschooling children with disabilities and the risks created from inadequate parenting. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Ken Pope, who will be telling us about Ulysses clauses for personal care for those with mental health conditions. So tell me a little bit about clauses for caregivers.
Well, they're kind of neat. You wouldn't come across them very much. A lot of times, of course, people have mental health problems, psychological issues. And when they're well, they're well. When they're not well, they're not well. And, of course, at that point, they may well not have insight into the fact that they're not well, and they may refuse treatment. So then you get into a question of, you know, Form 1 and 2 and 3 and so on, trying to compel treatment and consent and capacity and this and that, all those. But it's possible for them, well, and with insight, to sign a power of attorney for personal care, just personal, and to sign certain wording and have certain arrangements, capacity assessments and so on, such that the section of the power of attorney that allows their attorney to oblige them to receive treatment is enforceable and non-revocable. Now, the story itself comes from Ulysses. He's sailing home from Troy after the war, and he's going to pass the sirens. And the sirens all sing so sweetly that they entice the sailors to jump into the sea to be with them, and then they drowned. So what he does is he has his oarsmen tie him to the mast so that he can hear them but can't jump in, and to then put wax into their own ears. And that's where the name of the clause comes from, where you're obliged to have treatment. And it's like the story about Ulysses.
So I'm curious.
Yeah. It's an alternative in a way to a question that clients always ask me about, he's not competent. He's ill. He's not competent. Can I have him assessed and found not competent and seek legal guardianship and so on, which is a whole process. Discussion and process, of course, but
so
it's very difficult because when a person's not well, it's pretty tough to compel them even to sit still for a capacity assessment. And if you have them found, excuse me one second. If you have them found involuntarily incapable, then unless you're careful, the public guardian becomes their statutory guardian rather than the parents or the brother or sister who wants to take care of them and seek legal guardianship rather than statutory guardianship.
So in this sense, the obligation to treatment, to what level is it generally allowed? If it's something that puts someone
100%, at risk? 100%, because the law provides due to privacy and patient rights and all those things. Everybody has the right to be sick. And you get support being sick if you happen to belong to groups like, you know, psychiatric survivors or Canadian Mental Health Association. You know, the rights of the sick person are paramount, which they are in law, no question. And meanwhile, the family wants the child to receive care and be treated and be better. And, of course, the child, you know, opposes this because there's nothing wrong with them. And they've got the trump card, there's no question.
So it comes from a place of whether the child recognizes it or not, their needs or what's taken into consideration.
Yes, and you can understand that, you know, mental illness, especially something like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. If a person's got a bipolar disorder and they're on the high phase, you know, they're high. They're having a hell of a good time, right? Whatever the plan is that they've got, you know, as radical and unrealistic as it may be, you know, they're just like a drug. They're not going to change their mind. Why would they do that? So, you know, and it's a fascinating, forgive me, but it's a fascinating illness, like schizophrenia, because what it does is it may, you know, make you cognitively impaired in a sense that your reality really isn't our reality, but it takes over your whole database. You know, so even if you're brilliant, then you're going to be a brilliant person who's with schizophrenia. Now, you may be completely delusional and hallucinating, auditory hallucinations, and, you know, all of those things. So obviously that'll impair your ability to manage. No question about that. But
the thing about
the illness knows everything you know. It's got everything you've ever learned. It knows all the things that you ever know about your family, about your friends, about those three black cars that went down the street one after the other yesterday morning. Right? It's insidious.
So
you know, it's self-protective. It's amazing. It's a phenomenal illness. It's just a terrible thing.
When it comes to a condition like schizophrenia in particular, there's a lot of myths out there, including the fact that a lot of people associate it with violent behavior, whereas a person with schizophrenia generally isn't.
There is a fear. There's definitely a fear, yeah.
So what would you suggest to anyone who has these questions of competence if there's any uncertainty about should this person have care mandated for them? What would you suggest?
Well, in my opinion, obviously, you know, I act for the family. The child should certainly be given the best care available possible. The fact that the child doesn't want to receive it's another story. And the fact that the individual has a mental illness, you know, when they're well, they're just like everybody else, you know, sweet, intelligent, helpful. When they're ill, they're not so much, but it's not that they're, you know, generally speaking, they're not, you know, not normally a risk for themselves or others. And if they are a risk, it's themselves that's at risk in the most part. You know, it's just delusions. Remember one fellow who, he was very, very sure that the one night a time portal to open up between two trees in the back of his parents' yard, and would allow him to go to another time. And he had clothes appropriate to that time, and he had money in his wallet appropriate to that time. Now, of course, the portal never opened. You know, which is unfortunate. It would have been very interesting. He was of no harm to anyone except himself, and only then in the sense that he was restricted in his activities because of his delusions.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Maslina Khan, who will be giving us an update on Smile Canada. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with Smile.
I'm the program coordinator for Smile Canada. And so as the organization supports children with disabilities and their families, our focus is on racialized families in Ontario. We have many families who are from different communities and minority groups, and we have children with different needs, and we run a lot of assessments, and we're doing events as we usually do. Like in the summer, it was one of our busiest summers. We had run soccer clinics, therapy groups, and whatnot. So as summer has slowed down, we're starting back our regular programming in terms of having our youth events and our kids events about like once a month. But that's pretty much what Smile has been up to.
So with the upcoming election, is there any concern in regards to the work that you're doing? Anything the community should know about children with disabilities or their families or any of the policies that are proposed?
Right. So issues that affect diverse groups. Smile works with many new immigrants and refugees, and they're dealing with funding is a huge one. So budget cutbacks in areas that affect children and their families. So funding for services and supports and funding for social and community programs. And again, I'm pretty sure you're aware of the teacher cutbacks and the educational assistance support as well. So in order for accommodations and inclusion to work in a successful way, children do need support in the classroom. So those are things that we are looking at when it comes to voting.
So has there been any success Smile has seen in terms of providing information or support to immigrant families with children with disabilities and helping them navigate?
To help them navigate the voting system?
Yes.
So Smile encourages families and their community members by posting it on our social media, which includes Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We find it imperative for individuals to vote to get their voices heard, especially with families who have children with disabilities. So we are cognizant of the fact that accessibility inclusion is important, especially when it comes to platform policies. However, we never encourage our individuals to vote for a specific party. We only highlight the importance of voting and relevant policies that deal with disabilities. So there's also an organization called the Canadian Muslim Vote, also known as TCMV. So we partnered with them for this election this season to do a post on importance of voting, even if you have a disability. So TCMB is a nonprofit organization that aims to increase civic engagement of Canadian Muslims.
So if you could send any message about the need for the ongoing work of Smile, organizations like it, what would you say?
Honestly, we are glad that Smile is a part of that narrative, and we are starting that conversation in terms of dealing with the face of people with disabilities in racialized communities. However, there are a long ways to go. There are so many things that need to be done in the private and public sector, and we are happy to be a part of that conversation, and we are more than happy to have other organizations collaborate with us and be a part of our community as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.